Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Look at my butt. Now look at my front butt.
Wada, 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 wada.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Blood receiver pressure increases.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Only Magneto's right. There's a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
Everybody, and welcome to this very, very special episode. Well, as he's about to get into in a few detail in a moment, Carl is doing something for Gay Pride Month this month. And with his regular producer out having fun at Monster Bash this weekend, damn you, I should be there too. That's sort of a joke. Carl, if you listen to his 70s show, the man loves his detail. But I think we were debating about before the show that the whole 70s thing he did were like 10
episodes.
It was
episodes like 40, 50 shows.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 10 episodes on each year and a movie from each year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of them were actually 2 episodes for a year, too. And then a movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was certainly at least 30 episodes, if I remember.
Yeah. And here's Carl to tell you what he's been doing this month and why. Well, just give us the overview and why you were doing it and why do you feel so passionate about the subject?
Well, there's a number of reasons, but I have now moved to New York, and I'm living with an old friend of mine I've known for over 40 years, and his name is Richard Wandel, and Richard is actually in the history books as being the second president of the Gay Activists Alliance in 1970-71. I met him when I was in Bradford. He had moved to Bradford to get away from everything. And we've been close friends, and also with me being bullied and all that sort of thing as far as my disabilities and that sort of thing, I always felt a kinship to any other groups that were bullied for the same reason, for being different. And Richard really, like, opened my eyes to what, you know, gay culture and the gay liberation movement was. And so I've always been very, very much a staunch ally. So that's part of the reason. And now that I'm in New York, it is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. For those of you who don't know the Stonewall riots, the Stonewall was a bar on Christopher Street. And it was always being raided. And this one particular June, and I think it was June 26th, 50 years ago, in 1969, basically everybody there just had enough. And the main proponents of the uprising were, at that point, they were called transsexuals. We would call them now transgender. transgender females, and they started this whole political movement by saying no. And in New York, if you're in New York City right now, everything is Pride. I mean, they're going to do the first time ever that the Pride Parade will be televised on ABC this Sunday at 12
yeah.
noon. Okay, and that's the first time
and,
ever it's been so everything's
and,
Pride Month. So
this is an interesting side note. There's a documentary on Stonewall that's coming out this summer.
Right, right. And of course, they're doing that specifically to time it with the 50th anniversary. So what we're doing over at the Deviant Legion, I decided to specifically focus my shows on LGBT pride and arts. So the first show, my friend Rich Wandel was on, and we had him talking about the history of the movement and his involvement and that sort of thing. The second, last week, we did LGBTQ music. And then this week, of course, I'm doing the show here with Steven, but tomorrow we'll be recording the show with two people who wrote a book called, The Resurrection of Gay Vision, which is Doug Blanchard is the artist, and Kit, I can't think of her last name right now, but Kit is the wrote that, and Chrissy, our resident transgender female, will be producing. So that should be a very interesting show, and I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to end it up next week. But we'll definitely have something next week. So I wanted to do a series on, the arts and LGBT. And so Stephen, knowing that my regular producer, Doc, was not here this week, said, well, come on to my show and we'll do film. And again, I want to thank you very, very much, Steve, for the opportunity to do this.
Yeah.
So my hat's off to you, sir.
And this show was dedicated not only to Vito, but what's his last name, Carl?
Well, I'll mention that to a second. I'll get into Vito. Go ahead
dedicating this show is dedicated to him and his book, which is not only one of the best books ever written on gay cinema, one of the best movie books, period,
ever written. And Stephen is referencing a gentleman by the name of Vito Russo. Vito Russo was an activist, a gay activist. He was involved with the GAA. He was involved with the Mattachine Society, and also ACT UP. And also was very much at the front lines of the AIDS crisis, and a spokesman for the gay community on that. And so he was an activist, but he was also a great film lover. And so many people who knew him, such as Bette Midler and Liza Minnelli and various people, all suggested very strongly that he write this book. And the book is called The Celluloid Closet. Celluloid Closet also was made into a film after he passed away. But it is the definitive book on LGBTQ cinema. It starts from the very, very beginning up until the 80s. It's a tremendous book. Now, I also had the pleasure of meeting Vito on two occasions through Richard. One time that we really got to talk was I talked to him about the possibility of doing a book on handicapped and how handicapped are taken. He thought that was a pretty decent idea. But we also talked about LGBTQ cinema at the time, and he was a really, really fine gentleman. So this show is definitely dedicated to the memory of Vito Russo. So Stephen, let me just ask you this. What do you know about the formation of gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, and queer characters in film? Just as a basic rule, what do you know?
Well, the basic rule is that, and it's a big part of the closet, is that how they were hidden in the movies, or they would just go and bring up the transvestites and the characters and the companies and use them as humorous characters.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so let's talk a little bit about the history. Okay, so the first film that featured, quote, gay material was a film that was done in 1895 between two men dancing together, and it's called the Dixon Experimental Sound Film. And it's basically labeled and published in three books as the Gay Brothers. So at the time, you know, I don't think the words gay or queer or anything like that was there. The word was fanciful. So they're just acting fanciful. You know, they're just acting like women. That's fine, you know. And so that would be the first actual depiction of gay relationship in film. Go ahead, Stephen.
Yeah, before we got gay, they were the dandies, peacocks.
You know, don't forget the two major names which came into the 30s, which would be sissies and pansies. Now, Vito Russo preferred the term sissies. And what happened, okay, so during the 30s, you had the Great Depression. And everyone was poor, so nobody was going to film. So during this time, it was thought that we have to be more on the edge of things to bring customers in. And so you know, that called for inclusion of more controversial topics, such as prostitution, violence, and creating a demand for sissies and their lesbian counterparts to stimulate or shock the audience. So now the gay lesbian character was there to shock and basically scare the audience. And with this new influx of provocative subjects, you know, of course there was debate on the negative effects. And so in 1934, I believe that the Motion Picture Production Code, which is also known as the Hays Code, was established to curtail additional government censorship.
The Green Code came for the Hays Code.
Right, exactly. The Green Code was from the government, and then the Hays Code was where the Motion Picture Society took over. And also, don't forget the Catholic Church and fundamentalist Protestant groups had a lot to do with that, too.
And, Carl,
there was the
I can tell you
leaders.
The moment when most of us straight men realized that gays and lesbians weren't that bad.
Okay, tell me.
It's when Marlena Dietrich walked out in that full tuxedo and hat smoking a cigar.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, and let's talk about characters, okay? So one of the things is gender role reversals, okay? So that's exactly what you're talking about here, okay? Marlene Dietrich and what is that? The Scarlet
Blue Angel.
Oh no, that's Morocco. Actually, that's Morocco. That okay. She does that at Morocco, but so. So before the Hays Code or the Green Code, there were a number, including Charlie Chaplin's A Woman, in which Chaplin dresses as a female and plays with the affection of various men. Famous series of drag impersonations, including Miss Fatty, which of course was Patty Arbuckle, and Sweetie, which was Wallace Beery, created a comedic view of drag that in the late 10s and 20s could find entertaining. And don't forget that a lot of this got into vaudeville, too. A lot of this got onto the stage.
Burlesque.
So, burlesque, absolutely. And you take a look at even later in the 50s with Milton Berle and all this, Mrs. Doubtfire. It's still very prevalent today. But to go back to some of the role reversals, Charlie's Aunt is one of the big ones. And the first one was 1915. And that's basically a predecessor to Mrs. Doubtfire. Morocco, we mentioned that with Marlene Dietrich. Queen Christina with Greta Garbo. Sylvia Starlight with Katherine Hepburn. I Was a Male War Bride.
I can remember that moment, Carl, in Queen Christina, where she's talking, and all of a sudden, Your Majesty, and then boom, this gay guy in full makeup just takes over the entire frame.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and that was right before the Hays Code came in. But Sylvia Scarlett is one with Katharine Hepburn. I Was a Male War Bride with Cary Grant. Let's not forget one of the great ones, as far as I'm concerned, is Glenn or Glenda. And then, of course, one of the true great comedies of all time is Some Like It Hot. All about gender reversal. Generally, more often a male dressing as a female. But, again, with Morocco, and don't forget, don't forget, just a couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, there was Albert Nobbs with Glenn Close, where she portrayed a man. That's still there. So, okay. Go ahead, Stephen.
And like I said, Some Like It Hot has one of the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful, end lines ever.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm a man. Well, everyone has problems.
That's not exactly it. That's the basic gist of it.
And don't forget our beloved film noir and exploitation welcomed gays with open arms.
Which one? We go back to
The Maltese Falcon.
Okay, it's funny. I'm gonna start there. That's exactly where we're going. Okay.
Yeah.
So what happened after the war? Okay, and the censorship code, was still pretty tight at this time, and there were things where what happened was people who were gay or lesbian, LGBTQ community, the depictions took a very dark turn, and so it was called sexual perversion, and anyone who did this and was a sexual pervert, of course, had to be punished. And so you take a look at specific characters. Now, you talked about the Maltese Falcon. Take a look at the character Joel Cairo by Peter Lorre. Who gets the worst death in that movie?
Yeah, but they didn't portray him as a pervert.
Well, let me put it this way. They weren't allowed to. Okay, I mean, all of this, don't forget that this was sort of hidden. For example, he might be a bit effeminate and so on and so forth, but there's nothing specific that says that he's gay, unless you know some of the coded language. Coded language. Okay, the coded language there would be gunzel. It's called a gunzel. That is a coded term for a homosexual.
Yeah. And it's funny how that word became took away its gay connotation and it became man, like man with a gun.
Right, exactly. Because they didn't want that word associated specifically with gays. So, because they didn't want to acknowledge that gays exist. Remember, we're in a period now where everything is coded. Nothing is overt. Don't forget that also has to do with heterosexual. You know, during this time, you know, you couldn't see a man and woman in bed. They always had to have their foot on the ground if they were near a bed. I mean, it was very, very purient at this time. And one of so what happens is starting in the 50s, there's some push and pull, and the code starts to break down a little bit. And the first one I would mention would be Rope. Okay, it's 1948. Mm-hmm. It's Hitchcock. Basically, it's about the Leopold and Lebb murders. Leopold and Lebb were at least portrayed. I don't know if this was confirmed or not, as gay lovers in the press. And in the film, Jimmy Stewart plays a dabbler in philosophy who introduces the two boys to the Superman theory of the superiority of some humans over others. He becomes horrified when he realizes that the theories he espoused had led to murder. His character is somewhat hysterical repudiation of his formerly held beliefs, mirrored the fears of some Americans about the infiltration of alien ideas. Read communism. Okay? That the homosexuals in Rope were connected to the arts, as were many of those investigated, seems apt in view of the longstanding suspicions about politics and sexual practices of people so engaged. This actually is footnoted from Vito's book. Okay?
Yeah.
So another thing I need to mention, too, is that previously in the pansy era, in the 30s, okay, there were stereotypes that tropes were put in stone. So, you know, even in the 70s into the 80s, if you saw a stereotypical gay character, Stephen, what would be some of the things that they did for work? What was their employment, generally?
Hairdressers. Costumers.
Okay, keep going. Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And
thank
let me
you.
Say something that you forgot. You're forgetting an important one, and not for the reasons that you think, and that would be Kroger Babs mom and pop.
I haven't even
because
gotten there
you
yet.
Realize that, let me finish, he got that right. And then mom and pop started in the 30s. So at the counter of there, he would have two books, Sexuality and Woman, which would show pictures of naked women for clinical purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And it also had, the second book he sold was Sexuality in Men, which had nude pictures of nude men for clinical purposes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know, there was a lot of that. Of course, Kroger Babb, we're being a little more mainstream with this show, but Kroger Babb certainly has a lot to do with sexploitation as a general rule.
And the reason is, unlike mainstream films, and this sums it up, all the exploitationers said, do the gays have money? Yes. Will they spend the money? Yes. Let's make movies for them.
Yeah, and of course that was very true, and we'll get into that more into the 60s. And I'm going to let you take that because you've got three films that you think are very important. They're all 1960 films. But we're still in the 50s here. And so at this point, what we're looking at is the censorship code became more liberalized in the 50s and 60s. And culturally, American consumers were less likely to boycott a film because the Catholic Church said so. And don't forget, there are movies in the 50s like Baby Doll, which of course have nothing to do with LGBTQ, but you know, were much more less purient and so you had this push and pull now against the Hays Code. And so there are certain films that start making reference. And one of the first was The Seven-Year Itch. Seven-Year Itch has a subplot of these neighbors who are three male tenants who are, I think they say something like, oh, they're interior decorators or something like that. You know, but as a general rule, if you were gay, bisexual, lesbian, it was basically treated as a trait of miserable and suicidal misfits who frequently killed themselves or other people. So, I mean, you've got this whole situation where in this time frame, it's not being, it's certainly not a good thing to be a gay person and not. Of course, not viewed in such a way. Now, there's a major film we have to talk about in the 50s. And I'm going to let Steven start with this one. And one of the ones that really, really broke some ground would be Lawrence of Arabia. Now, before you go, Steven, just keep in mind this won several Academy Awards. And in many ways, I think this really... put a big crack chink in the wall here. So what's your thoughts on Lawrence of Arabia? Stephen? Okay, well, Stephen seems to have disappeared for a moment. As I said, Lawrence of Arabia was a very, very revolutionary for several reasons, and not just depicting not only a character who is heavily implied to be gay, but also implying a relationship between two men. Though Lawrence's sexuality remains ambiguous, director Lean and Peter O'Toole play his version of the desert hero as a gay man. Beyond this, Lean also implied a relationship. Okay. So I was just going through Lawrence of Arabia. So tell me what you think of Lawrence of Arabia, Stephen.
Well, Lawrence of Arabia, one of the most famous scenes in it is where Peter O'Toole gets raped.
Well, I don't know if I call that rape or I call that seduction. Okay? Not sure. But throughout the film,
the one I consider the biggest voice in gay cinema, because almost all the movies they made out of his play in the 50s always been major gay themes. And that would be Tennessee Williams. You would have Sweetheart of Paradise, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Suddenly Last Summer. God, suddenly left.
Yeah, well, let's not forget that Tennessee Williams was a gay man, and all of his plays have a gay subtext. And you're absolutely right that it was Lawrence of Arabia really is one of the first examples of an LGBTQ film being a box office success without an incredible amount of innuendo to disguise the gay nature of the film. And that's very, very true. And then after 61, the code relaxes even more. And so one of the first major lesbian films was The Children's Hour. So what do you want to say about The Children's Hour?
That film two or three times in the 60s? Was there a version in the 50s and the 60s? I know there was more than one.
Mm-hmm. You know, again, what we're talking about. Go ahead.
Yeah. There was one version of the Children's Hour where they basically downplayed the whole lesbian angle to a point where the secret made no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one that just let it all come out. And I know that was pretty much mid to late 60s.
Mm-hmm. Well, the 61 is the closest to the play. They did cut it a bit. But again, you've got a situation where the gay character hangs herself at the end, which, of course, sets this precedent for miserable endings in most films dealing with homosexuality. Okay, then another one in the 60s that we need to talk about is Inside Daisy Clover, which is based on a novel of the same name. Was one of the first mainstream American films to depict an expressly gay or bisexual character who, while forced to marry a woman for his career, is not uncomfortable with his sexual orientation, does not commit suicide or fall victim to murder. And it's basically, restricted to subtext and innuendo, but nonetheless, that was part of it. Now, when we talk about creating complex gay or bisexual films in the 60s, you got to talk about two people. And I'm going to kick it over to Stephen here for a moment. So, of course, one of those people would be Andy Warhol. But the other one that needs to be mentioned is Kenneth Anger. And Kenneth Anger actually is made a film that makes it in your top three LGBTQ films.
Well,
so why don't you talk about that film, Stephen?
The Underground is where you really started to see real movement in gay cinema because, as we've referred to it, they made couch movies. And what that means is make their movies, take it to coffee bars or someone's house and just drag out an old dirty couch or something and show the film that way. And Anger's film was Scorpio Rising, which was mostly focused on how fetishized the whole American biker thing was.
Mm-hmm.
Showing them wear leather and stuff like that with a lot of gratuitous crotch zoom in.
Yeah, but don't you think that Scorpio Rising was a non-judgmental film, or actually a celebratory film about being gay?
Yeah, that's nothing. These three films that came out in that era, they were not judgmental films. Were there? Like, I love Ant Million's Vapors. You didn't that much, and I liked it because it was just a casual Friday night out.
Mm-hmm. So tell a little more about Vapors and who wrote it and directed it. And
well, it was written by Hope Stansberry and a bunch of people that Andy Milligan based made and met at the Cafe Chino. So it's about just a regular night at the bathhouses. Is that what was called? The bathhouses, the places where gays could go and be gay and not have to worry about being judged out the outs by the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a couple of guys who meet, and both of them say this is their first time there. But you can pretty much tell that full of shit.
Yeah, it was a little pedantic. Now, talk a little bit about Andy Milligan, because I think you need to talk about Andy Milligan and his background, because it's very interesting. I give him credit for the film, so go ahead.
Andy Milligan is a filmmaker who was gay and really into the leather bar scene, Butch. He was a butch, mean S&M freak. And he made a series of exploitation films and horror films. But the thing is, if you only looked at his horror films, like The Rats Are Coming, The Werewolves Are Here, Bloodthirsty Butchers, you would think that he was one of the worst fucking filmmakers ever. And if judging on that, I wouldn't deny it. But when he got into the exploitation stuff and talking about the real stuff that he lived out on the dudes, this stuff is good. He's one of those that, you know, shouldn't have gone into horror and stuff and just kept his ass into drama and the exploit and things like that. That's where his ass belonged.
Yeah, he also was a playwright. He was involved in La Mama, for sure, and there was one before La Mama. But his
He was
his
one of
Gacy
the first
films,
people to put on plays at Cafe Kino, and he drifted
right.
out there once Doug's and guys like Sham Shepard and what was it called, Bernadette Peters, that play that was big there?
I can't remember. I don't know.
Well, it was something like Sailors or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he drifted out when someone left him, and he put on hit the kind of place he put on. He put on like Maids, other Jean Genet stuff, plays of his. And basically, he was basically you know, the poet laureate of Long Island. Because that's where he liked to film in this house of his. And he used this old blimp camera. But with those big giant mothers, it was hard to move it around. Which is why he had all of his shots, which I just tell Norby to piss out of you.
Yeah, it's pretty static, his stuff. I'll have to admit that.
Yeah.
So there's one other film from the 60s that was underground that you want to talk about. So why don't you go there, and then I'll talk about the 60s in an international way.
And that would be Flaming Creatures. It's a film about a bunch of transsexuals up on a roof just doing there, and it ends up in an orgy and stuff. Thing about it is that this was the first gay, lesbian, you know, film to ever be successfully prosecuted for obscenity.
Yeah, which is a shame. Years later, well, during the trial, there were numerous people that backed the film, but years later, wasn't that conviction overturned? Or at the very, very least.
Yeah, they got
it
up to Supreme Court.
Okay. And it was overturned, was it?
Yeah, it was overturned.
Okay, good.
And pretty much that precedent what's the Deep Throat and the adult film industry.
And thanks to that for sure. And of course, you know, that if you take a look at that, and we'll get into that in the 70s, so most of the films were not gay that were, you know, the porno chic. Certainly, the porno chic had an influence, you know, on loosening what could and could not be addressed in film. And you start to see that in the 70s. So there's a number of films in the 60s that need to be addressed. And one would be Advising Consent, which is an Otto Preminger film. And Stephen, you know this film a little more than I do. And I will also say this. This is a film that for gays, lesbians, the LGBT community that were growing up in the 60s and would see films, this would be the first time that they saw a real gay character that was a gay character. Richard has definitely said that to me. And Bison Consent was the first film he saw where it was very, very apparent and not coddled, you know, or downplayed as far as a gay character. So tell me a little bit about Advice and Consent.
The basic plot is that, remember the guy got shot down in New Orleans? It was all King's Men.
Yeah. Can't remember his name.
It's basically a character based on him, where basically he had power, and he used blackmail as power, and he found out that the guy he needs to swing a vote to where he wanted to was gay. So he used that against him to try and blackmail him, but it didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a film that I think is an answer, an American answer to an earlier British film. And the British film that I need to mention at this point, it's called Victim. Victim was directed by Basil Dearden. It's 1961. It stars Dirk Bogarde and Sylvia Sims. Now, for those of you that don't know, but Dirk Bogarde at this point was a closeted gay, and after this film, he came out. And you have to remember, at this point in time in England, it was against the law to be homosexual. And if you know anything about Alan Turing, who was the code breaker in World War II, there was a movie about him a couple years ago. He was gay, and because of this law, they made him take pills to basically castrate him, chemically castrate him, and he committed suicide. And so in Britain, it was very, very common for black male. And this premiered in August of 1961 in the U.S. the following February. It was extremely controversial. And in the U.S., it was refused the seal of approval from the American Motion Picture Society. So this one, and one of the reasons for this, and I want to make this very clear, because I think this is one of the most important gay films, and certainly number three in my list, would be that Dirk Bogarde character doesn't break. He doesn't commit, you know, give in to the blackmail. He stands his ground. He is vilified. His marriage is destroyed. But he does not fall down. He fights, and the end of the film is very, very open ended. You don't know what's going to happen to him. You know that the police are coming for him to arrest him, and he's there standing. And to me, that was a great, very, very powerful statement of this film. Even more so than Advice and Consent, because if I remember correctly, Stephen, correct me if I'm wrong, hold on, is that at the end of the movie, doesn't he have remorse or anything like that, the character?
No.
No, he doesn't. Okay.
Oh, and here's a funny story about it. Once it got banned and that film fused,
okay,
the gay underground film community and theaters were like, shit, give me that.
Yeah, it's...
So probably got better distribution by them banning it.
Oh, they yeah.
They would have just let it fade away into nothing.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And it's a brilliant film. And there is a BFI, I think, all system DVD, Blu-ray of that. But also, TCM does run the film quite a bit. Okay, so definitely want to mention that. Now, the British, there were so many British films from the era. And certainly that would be one. Another one would be, hold on just a second here, The Fox. Now, you know The Fox, don't you? This is 1967. It's Sandy Dennis, and I forget who the other person is. I can find that out.
Yeah.
Anne Haywood and Cara Delevingne. But it's basically a triangle between two women and a man who comes in between them. And it's a very interesting film.
And don't forget that gay S&M movie that the British put out in the mid-60s.
Well, which one are you talking about? I might be getting to it.
The one with the butler? You know.
You're talking about The Servant.
Yeah, The Servant.
Oh, yeah. Great film. Great film. Also directed by Joseph Losey, who was an American expat who was basically kicked out of America because of McCarthyism, but also Joseph Losey was gay. And so you see a lot of his films, there's a lot of gay subtext.
Don't bring up the damn moment, cuz if you've seen the U.S. cut or either of them, you would be saying to me and Carl, why the hell are you putting this in a gay film, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
But if you've seen the uncut version,
basically you're going, holy shit, what a movie. Yeah.
Yeah, Oliver Reed didn't give a damn ditty.
Yeah, well, you know, another film, too, that Losey did, that you can certainly put in gay scene would be Accident. That's another film. And that's also Harold Pinter, and don't forget that Harold Pinter is gay. So, you know,
there... We'll get into it more a little later, right? About what I mean when I said Oliver Reed really didn't get a damn...
Right, right. You know, again, I'm going from decade to decade. Now we got to talk about some. You know, we mentioned The Fox, which is a lesbian film. We got to mention one other film for sure, and that would be The Killing of Sister George. And it's a brutal, brutal black comedy. Basically, an aging lesbian television actress, June Buckridge. Beryl Reed, who is just fantastic, faces the loss of her popular television role and the breakdown of her long-term relationship with a younger woman, who's Susanna York. The film version is though the play was a black comedy, the film version was called a shocking drama, and it added explicit, and I do mean explicit for the time, lesbian content that was not in the original play. And it was presented as a serious treatment of lesbianism. Now, keep in mind that, yes, we've got the whole thing of, oh, yeah, just, we're going to commit suicide at the end and it's going to be terrible. And, so it's not a great representation. So the film itself is excellent. And I do recommend it.
Sounds like a gay All About Eve.
Pardon? Say that again, Stephen?
It sounds like gay All About Eve.
Yeah, basically it is. Basically it is. Now we also have to get into two other films, which are basically mirror images or reflections, and I use the word reflections for a reason. And that would be Reflections in a Golden Eye would be one film, and the other film would be The Sergeant. Both have to do with military life and a commanding officer who falls for a younger recruit. And so in Reflections, it's Marlon Brando and Robert Forster. And the sergeant, it's Rod Steiger and John Philip Law. Do you know both films, and do you have one that you prefer to the other, Stephen?
I like GoldenEye, but all I can think about when I hear watch GoldenEye and hear about it, the story Forster talks about riding that horse naked and rushing off about an inch of skin on his thighs from that rough horse hair.
Right. You know, and I also agree with you about Reflections in the Golden Eye, and that's the main reason for me is Robert Forster, who that was his film debut, and he was tremendous in it. The film itself is rather haphazard, I think. It's not one of John Huston's best, but still, it's a very interesting film. now, we haven't really talked about foreign films, and we'll get more into this in the 70s because I got to mention somebody in the 70s. But I do want to talk about Teorama. Teorama is an allegorical mystery, and it's directed by Pasolini. And it stars Terrence Stamp and a bunch of Italian actresses, Laura Betty, Silvania Magnano, and so on and so forth. And basically, it's about a Milanese family who's introduced and then abandoned by a divine force. The divine force, of course, is Terrence Stamp. And just as usual with Terrence Stamp, you don't fuck with Terrence Stamp. I don't care if he's a transvestite. I don't transgender. I don't care. You never
screw
around with
Terrence. Well, it's your trauma you need to take out with.
Yeah.
That's what kids look up destroys them. Don't fuck.
But basically what happens is that the visitor, which is Terrence Stamp, basically seduces everybody in the family. And I do mean everybody.
Yeah, he gives them the worst thing to a mental love. And what it is they get a letter. All that's on the letter is, I am coming. And
no,
then Terrence Stamp shows up and basically destroys their karma, to put it in place.
Well, what he does, he doesn't destroy. It's more like Shiva, where everything is upset, but then karma comes around and set things back. You know, there are people that do die. The maid returns and she immolates herself. The mother seeks sexual encounters with young men. Son leaves home to become an artist. Daughter sinks into a catatonic state, so it's not all good. But it's very, very much you get what you deserve.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
And we have seen the movie. We're not stupid. It doesn't give you any answers.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And I got to bring this up about Teorama, too. When it was released, the religious right in the Vatican just went apeshit. Seriously. Of course, the film won a special award at Venice. Then that was protested by the Vatican, and it was withdrawn. Pasolini, let us not forget, was also gay. He was also very, very much anti-fascist and anti-authoritarianism. So most of his films were always against the Catholic Church and various forms of fascism. So, you know, but it's a really fine film, and I do recommend it. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The one film I'll bring up from the late 60s, mid-60s, well, I'm just going to tell you who directed it, and you're just going to think, what the fuck is this? And it was filmed down in Florida, and it's She-Man. You know who directed that movie?
No, I don't know this film.
Bob Clark.
What?
Yes, He-Man, directed by Bob Clark. It's about this
thing. Stephen, you're breaking up. Say it again.
I'll tell you back. I'll call right back. Get back in a second.
No, don't call back. Just say it again.
Bob Clark, He-Man.
Oh, okay. Bob Clark, okay. Yeah, I don't know that film.
So what it's about, this guy who did something bad in the army, so this transvestite shows up and says, "You'll release to the world what you did unless he comes live with her as a woman for a month." And it turns out he likes it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't know that at all.
I guess it's one of the Something Weird they got, along with Scream of the Butterfly. They put out a few gay DVDs, but they flopped big time.
Mm-hmm. So now we're going to get into the 70s, and we're going to get into post-Stonewall. And the first thing I want to say before we get into this is to go back to Vito Russo. So in the late 70s, early 80s, particularly in the 80s, early 80s, Vito would do these presentations at colleges and various places where, as he was developing the book, Celluloid Closet, he would have clips and he would talk about what we've been talking about today, the evolution of gays in film and so on and so forth. And during the 70s and 80s, which was his time, one of the things he would do is he would, at the end of his lecture, he would have about a 10-minute montage on how gay characters, both lesbians and gays, bisexuals, transsexuals, so on and so forth, would die, and the horrible deaths that they dealt with. And it would be like 10 minutes of film. Okay? Remember this, particularly in the 70s, which is when I grew up, the representations, and we've talked about this as we go along, that the representations and the endings and it was considered very, very much a demonization of the LGBTQ community. So now as we get into it, I want you to keep that in mind, in the back of your mind, because one of the first major films we have to talk about in the 70s is The Boys in the Band. Now, there was an article I shared about a week or two ago. Okay, a reassessment of this film. And basically from today's viewpoint, you know, they all say that it's a terrible film because it's a terrible representation of gay. There's no pride. There's no, you know, they're all, all screwed up inside and all this sort of thing. And yet, if you remember the play in the film, which was directed by Friedkin, I talked to Richard about it, and he says, "I was there, okay, as a gay man, and we loved the film. We loved the film because we could see ourselves in it. And don't forget that the I can't remember who wrote the play, but he was also gay. But the boys in the band was hailed as a presenting of a landmark of truce. But again, it does reinforce certain anti-gay stereotypes and doesn't deal with LGBT rights. So there's that thing. Now, I know you know the film relatively well, Stephen. What do you think of Boys in the Band?"
Like I said, it could be eight. And it would still be a bunch of bitter, miserable motherfuckers that you would not want to spend 2 hours with. But I can't understand why gays like it. As being, the Mexicans and my fellow other Mexicans, we're always like, "Do you like it? Speedy Gonzalez. He's a bad representation. Why do you like Sopo Rodriguez? He's a bad representation. Yeah, but he is a representation. Something that's ours that you can't claim enough.
And that's very true. And that was sort of Richard's point. You know, you have to claim these things. Another film that we need to talk about briefly, and it was actually co-produced by MGM, was Fortune in Men's Eyes, which was directed by Harvey Hart. And that's a film that dealt with the issue of homosexuality in prison and depicted gays in a relatively open and realistic, non-stereotypical and non-caricature manner. And, of course, that is footnoted, again, coming from Vito and his book Celluloid Closet. So I have never seen Fortune in Men's Eyes, never got to see it, so I don't know it. But everything
That's
I've read about it is,
the film.
Yeah, is very, very good.
That's one of those that read about it, and then I was like, you mean this was an actual movie?
Yeah.
How come I haven't seen it? You know? How have I had the chance to miss it?
Right. And don't forget, too, there were films that were specifically started to be about gays. And one film that we have to talk about is A Very Natural Thing, which I do not know the film, directed and produced by Christopher Larkin. And basically it's about a gay man who leaves a monastery to become a public school teacher while looking for true love in a gay bar at night. And, you know, there were these films like Fortune in Men's Eyes and these films that were more specifically designed for gay audiences. Now, you know, you go into films like things like Sunday Bloody Sunday, Cabaret, Ode to Billy Joel. They all have gay characters, gay references. Even a lot of the buddy cop movies, one of my favorites is Busting. Always you would see the gay character as a hustler, you know, in a negative light, you know, made fun of and so on and so forth. But you start to see some positive points and films. And one of the films I want to talk about in the 70s, and we haven't really discussed transgender films.
Let me
say go
real
ahead.
Quick. The best line in Ode to Billy Joel, which you wouldn't think would be a gay positive movie, is when the woman's talking to James Best after Robbie Benson kills himself. And he's like, you know what the first thing was for? What? He likes it. He didn't want to admit it. He's like, what's so bad about that? He's like, I don't know. Some of them think it makes you less of a man. But I've lived for 50 years and I'm still the same man I was.
Nice. And despite, you know, tolerance of homosexuality, you know, they still just depicted as an insult and joke. And so one of the films that one of the genres we haven't talked about is transgender. And though we've talked about role reversal, gender reversal, but transgender is a little different. And one of the films that I saw on HBO in the 70s that really, really had a impact on me was Outrageous. Outrageous was a Canadian film about basically a gay cabaret, or actually in this case a bisexual cabaret drag queen and his life. And he finds himself sort of torn between both sexes. And And it comes to the fact where he realizes that he's bisexual. And it's a wonderful film. It's lots of comedy. The guy that did it was a very famous Canadian drag queen. And it's a wonderful film. What do you know about Outrageous? Do you know that film?
Oh, I've seen it. It's good. My favorite bit in the movie is when he's trying to explain to her. He's like, "But you see that guy over there? Yeah, I would love to have sex with him. Me too. Perfect couple."
Yeah. Yeah. It was a pretty celebratory film of an openness. And this to me, when I talk about my favorite LGBTQ films, I want to talk about positive. And so if I'm talking about my second favorite LGBTQ film, it would be Outrageous, because there's nothing negative in that film. Not a thing. Okay? So,
and this is all I've got to say about the negative films. Group marriage.
Well, I don't really. I'm not saying there isn't queer content in that, but I wouldn't even mention that film.
Not queer content. That's the gay version of blackface. Now let's move on.
Well, I don't think you should have mentioned it. It's okay. It's okay. Sometimes films don't deserve to be mentioned. But now. In the 80s, and as I have said before, and people do know me, this is when I came to New York, was in 1981. And starting in 1982 was the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. And so the 80s, you have a lot of that type of film coming out. Certainly... The first American film about the pandemic was Parting Glances, which was 1986. And there was also an Early Frost, which was a TV movie. But the first mainstream Hollywood film would come at the end of the decade, 1989. And Stephen, I'm going to let you have this because you love this film. So go ahead and tell us about Longtime Companion.
Yeah, this was and is the most honest film about AIDS, and I like it how it's an AIDS movie, but it's not about AIDS. It's about five people that you could work with, you know, just normal people who are friends, gay, and them dealing with AIDS.
Yeah, it's...
And that's
it's,
the hardest kind of film... To find when you deal with any pandemic, AIDS or not, is finding one that would focus more on the people than on the devastation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tell you what, if people get a chance to see Parting Glances, they need to do that. Steve Buscemi has a supporting role. It's a very hard film to find these days. But it's about a gay male couple and his partner stays behind, and when he comes back from Africa, he has AIDS, and it's a tough film. But out of all those films about AIDS, that's the one I would recommend. However, Stephen and I will absolutely agree on one thing. What's the worst movie about AIDS?
Philadelphia, the AIDS movie without AIDS.
Yeah. Yeah, I do not like Philadelphia at all.
And I've talked to some
not
of my gay friends, and they agree with me. Why would a regular average Joe, gay person, feel bad for someone that has $1 million high-rise apartment in New York, millions in the bank, and is fucking Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, really.
Where's
and by the way, it's not New York,
sympathy?
It's Philadelphia. It's Philadelphia, it's not in New York.
Still, you know what I mean. How do you feel about sympathy for a rich white guy who's married to a beautiful spouse and has millions in the bank?
Yeah, really. I just find it white privilege all over the place, that film. And, of course,
Yeah.
Of course, Denzel Washington, don't forget, is the one major black character, and he's very, very prejudiced against him, at the beginning, anyway. And it's like
he's
it's
not
like,
prejudiced enough. He's racist enough where they say, he's changed. They should have took him closer to Joe than to just your, you know, than his character was in the movie.
Yeah, I just feel that it's so fake. I think that film is so fake. Now, the one thing, if we're talking about age-related films, we really need to talk a little bit about probably the best representation of that era, which came out many, many years later. First as a play, and I think in the 2000s, it finally got to HBO.
Let me say something real quick to wrap up a point.
Oh, hold on. Let me just
see what I mean, what they should have done with Denzel's character. Look on YouTube for an episode of All in the Family where Archie makes friends with a transvestite.
Now, that's interesting. I knew there was an episode, but I don't know about – I haven't seen that in years, so I don't know the episode.
You know, what happens, he makes friends with him and stuff, and then it shows him leave Archie's house, and then a bunch of thugs in the neighborhood beat him to death.
Jesus.
And the thing is, the episode is Archie sitting in the living room crying, going, all he was my friend.
Yeah. You know, but getting back to the AIDS representations, I was talking about Angels in America is the play that was made into a 3-part miniseries. And if you want a true representation of that era in New York City, you have to watch Angels in America. So, let's go on to
the
90s.
Was the third part ever in a play?
What?
Was the third part ever in a play, or did they just write that for TV? I know part one and two came in as plays first.
I think that was written specifically for TV, but that was written by the playwright.
Okay.
For TV. As sort of like a wraparound, you know, to finish up the whole thing and bring it into the 90s and the 2000s. So.
Oh. You're forgetting.
Go ahead, and then I need to keep going here, Stephen. So,
yeah, this is real good. What movie should you watch? Was it Citizen Khan? It got the ending of the movie in Angels of America.
I you're breaking up a bit. Say it again, slowly.
Citizen Khan, they should watch that because Angels
Citizen
of Cone. Has the
Citizen
Cone. Cone.
It's about
yeah.
Roy Cone. Citizen Cone. Yeah, I would recommend that too. Citizen Cone is very interesting. But I want to get into the 90s now. And the 90s basically is the beginning of what is called the new queer cinema. And so you have a lot of independent films, a lot of films coming around that are written by openly gay people, featured mostly LGBTQ characters, were open about their orientation, and so on and so forth. And then what they did is the bigotry against gay people that you've seen all the way through is now, you know, transposed as part of like anti-Semitism or racism or sexism, and they're all connected. And that's what is happening in terms of cinema. So you're seeing a lot more open representations. And certainly if you go back a little further, and you could start in the 70s and 80s, one person we have not mentioned that I should have mentioned in the 70s is Rainer Werner Fassbinder, a German director. And if you want real representations of that time, particularly Fox and His Friends, you need to watch. But also, then you get Lakaja Bowles, which was then later remade an American film called The Birdcage. You have To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, which starred Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and John Leguizamo. But I need to talk about what I consider my favorite LGBTQ film, and one that I truly, truly, truly love. And that would be The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Stephen, I'm going to kick this over to you because I know you love this movie as much as I do. So yeah. Go ahead.
And the three directors, real quick, the three directors that Carl forgot about are Derek Jarman, Greg Rocky, and Todd Haynes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for doing that.
But yeah, this is about three transsexuals going to a gig in the middle of the desert. And then Secrets and Everything comes out. It has Guy Pearce in one of his best roles ever. Of all the three of them, why didn't he have as good a career? Because he is so fucking great in this.
Oh, absolutely.
Terrence Stamp should have won Best Supporting Actor that year, damn it. There's just ifs, ands, or buts.
We'll get to Terrence in a second. Don't forget Hugo Weaving. Either.
Oh, God, you Weaving. I showed it to a friend of mine right after. He's like, oh, I love The Matrix. I love Lord of the Rings. And Evil Side goes, show him. Show him. And then,
what was the reaction to seeing Hugo Weaving in full regalia?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a great movie, great drama and everything. And I love how it's hilarious, too. I can't even think about some of the lines in this movie, just killing myself laughing. Especially the bit where they find out Hugo Weaving's married to a woman and has a child.
Yes. It's a wonderful film, and it's very positive.
And it doesn't talk about it.
Representation. And one of the things that I love about it, and I will say this, and I mentioned this earlier, okay, I don't care if he's odd. I don't care if he's in drag. I don't care if he's the limey. I don't care if he's in Tanarama. I don't care whatever movie he's in. You do not fuck with Terrence Stamp. So there is a movie where Terrence Stamp actually plays a transsexual in this film, and post-op, okay? And so two bigots come after him in the Australian outback, and it is just like he just beats the livid crap out of these guys, and he will not stop. They actually have to pull him off of both of them. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And it's Counterpoint Film, which may have been mentioned or may have not. Nothing cookie cut candy coated. So
are you talking Julie Newmar?
Yeah. Me, John Leguizamo.
For what it is, it's okay, but
it's
no Priscilla. It's no Priscilla. Not even close.
Like,
I do have to say, I like John Leguizamo
in it.
Go
with the rest of it. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's great in it.
Yeah, he is great in it.
And I would like to bring up a film that really is a very gay film, but only if you catch on to it.
Okay.
This will be Miller's Crossing.
Well, you know, they play with the Gunsel character, definitely. And it's
a
movie about hats. It's
Gabriel
all about
Byrne and Albert Finney.
Yeah, and don't forget what I mean hats. When you wear a hat, you're a character. That hat shows who you are. And so look at the difference between the hat that John Turturro has on him.
Yeah.
Or Steve Buscemi. Or the Dane. Or, you know, come on, I can't, you know, ethics. What's the character? Thank you. But yeah, and Gabriel Byrne, it's all about how you present yourself. And it's a great film. It's a great film. And there's definitely gay subtext in that film. Now, I got to mention, you know, since we're into the aughts now and into the new millennia, I got to talk about the elephant in the room, and that would be Brokeback Mountain. Now, I went and I saw this film in the theater, and I got to tell you, I was not that impressed. I really wasn't. I didn't feel it was real. I didn't feel it didn't represent a real representation. I think part of that is that the person who wrote it is Cormac McCarthy. I am not a McCarthy fan at all. I don't think I don't get his writing, and I don't think he deals really good with characters or fleshes them out well. So my feeling on the film is very, very dissatisfied. I can guarantee you that other people disagree with me wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
So I just want to make that point.
My problem is, watch it. You're emotionally invested into the Heath Ledger and the other guy's characters. But then you spend 90% of the movie not with the characters that you're emotionally invested in.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a good point. That's a really good point, Stephen. You know, that's a really good point. And so, you know, as we look at this overview, and that's all this is, I'm not saying that this is, you know, really, really pointed and really researched. But we wanted to give a good overview. And the one thing I do want to mention, and I'm glad you mentioned the person's name, is Derek Jarman. We should talk a little bit about Derek before we end this up. Derek Jarman was started out as a set dresser for Ken Russell. And there's a movie that we did not mention, Stephen, that we have to. And Derek Jarman worked on it. And that would be Women in Love.
Oh, God, yeah. That's what I was saying. What I mean is, in the earlier film, he plays gay in The Years of the Damned. He plays it very gay in the scene with him and his motorcycle. And
right.
The nude wrestling scene is one of the most famous, iconic moments in gay cinema history in Woman in Love.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the one thing about Russell was about sexual freedom, and it didn't matter if it was gay, straight, or weird, because trust me, there's a lot of weird in Russell. He didn't care. And it's a great film. But Derek Jarman started there. And Derek Jarman, there's a film we have to talk about. There's two films, absolutely. And one is Orlando. Orlando, when we talk about, gender swapping, okay? Usually you're talking about males becoming females or females, you know, dressing up as males, you know, women as males or males as women. But in Orlando, it's a real transgender moment. Orlando is played by Tilda Swinton. Now, Tilda Swinton, of course, these days is very known for her androgynous looks. So Derek Jarman cast her as Orlando. And if you know the novel it's based on, and that changes sex throughout lifetime, which goes on for many, many years and many lifetimes. And so it's a very, very important film. And as you take a look at German's films from there onwards, you know, very, very much a gay voice and a very, very vivid voice in cinema. But
you know what's funny, Carl?
What?
They
go
were
ahead, because I'll finish
up. A male to the male part of the Orlando role.
Right.
But they seen Tilda do like a costume test for them.
Right.
And they're like, no, we don't need anyone else.
No, we don't. We got it. And she, you know, and that's not the only time she's played a male character. In the new Suspiria, she plays an old male character who, from what I understand, though I've not seen Suspiria, has a full nude scene with addended male genitalia.
Well, yeah, it was in the original script. The professor, which is played by her, was supposed to be naked. Can you imagine how much of a pain in the fucking ass would have been for the cameraman if they had not
yeah.
made that? Like,
yeah.
But here's one thing I forgot. When
okay,
it came out,
and then
I got to
finish up with German because I'm not done with German yet.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead with the Jarman stuff.
Okay. So, Derek Jarman was a very, very important voice in gay cinema. But probably his most important film was his last film, when he was on his deathbed with AIDS. What did he do? He did a movie called Blue. Have you ever seen Blue? Steven. Okay, let me just say what it is. It's a shorter film, and I think it's around 70 minutes, something like that. It's just a blue screen. That's all it is. And what it is you hear Jarman on his deathbed, and various people, including Tilda Swinton and people who worked with him, about seeing him waste away. And how this disease just eats at you. Now, we were talking, of course, about representations of that era of the AIDS era. But if you want something truly devastating, okay, and I mean it is devastating, watch Blue. It is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant film, and it's just a blue screen. But it's what's behind it, what's behind the screen, which you visualize.
Yeah.
That is truly heartbreaking. So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Derek Jarman because I needed to talk about him a bit.
Yeah.
All right, Stephen.
Well,
who did I miss?
Well, this film came out in the mid-90s, and we were all like, oh, my God, is it Steve's movie about these two lesbians? Directed by two perverted men, flash for 2 years. You mean both of them came sex change?
Well,
let's go look at Bound Again. Whoa, this is
absolutely.
The first truly gay film noir.
Oh, it's beautiful. It really is good. It really, really is good. Yeah.
here's a question for you. See if you can help me answer. What is it about film noir and gay subjects and subtext that they really make them great together?
Well, you know, the thing about film noir and about detective films and hard-boiled, you had gay characters in there, but they were always like Joel Cairo. They were gangsters. They were evil, so on and so forth. But the main thrust of that was sexuality, but it was heterosexuality. It was always about the woman, the femme fatale, leading the man into, you know, astray. And was very, very much in many ways anti-sex. And so I don't feel that that has a, not that there aren't, you know, LGBTQ characters in film noir, but they're very few and far between because that's not the focus of it.
Yeah, that's why it's great. You could watch a movie with a homosexual character and they're not focused on that one single fact. There was a slasher that came out last year called The Ranger Cross that you didn't realize that these two people were a gay couple until halfway through the movie when one of them gets killed and he's crying over him, talking about how much he loves him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, they didn't focus on it. They didn't make that the pistol. Lynch pistol the characters.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I hope there's a day where you know, because you know what? We live it. Okay? We live in a world where there are gays, straights, you know, blacks, you know, all of us here together. And really, it would be a wonderful thing just to see a film where these people of all different stripes can be shown and represented and be accepting of each other. And it doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, you know, bisexual, black, Jewish, you know, or even an alien with a big, big snout. Who cares? Seriously.
Yeah, that's one of the nicer things and the nicest things about the Ranger is they don't care.
Right. So anyway, I think at this point can I finish up here?
I just
wanted to say that as far as I'm concerned, I've done most of what I have prepared as far as LGBTQ cinema and a good overview of stuff. So what I was going to do before you started, Stephen, was kick it over to you for any last comments or films that you want to mention.
This is a story of two films. They're rock biography. One, the PG-13 one, which downplays the gayness of the character to the point where it almost doesn't exist. What happens to it? It wins Oscars. It gets to talk about how brave the guy was for playing the character to shake off all his rough edges. And that would be Bohemian Rhapsody. Imagine them making a movie about your guy, the line of coke nut.
Oh, Harry Nilsson.
But then they take out every reference to cocaine.
They wouldn't have a movie.
Right. And then you have Rocketman, which came out this summer, which is a brutal self look at himself.
True. I've not seen either, but I've heard really good things about Rocketman.
And one of the biggest subjects he brings up about himself in the film that the hardest person that it took to accept the fact that he was gay was himself.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, another thing you say about the film is like a statement from Elton John himself saying, "How the hell did I survive all this? Why am I still living?"
Yeah. You say that during the movie, like, how the hell is he freaking alive?
Yeah. True.
But the difference is Bohemian Rhapsody is a movie where the band is trying to write their history.
Mm-hmm.
And Elton John is just telling the truth.
Yeah. Very much so. You know, and again, I think we've got to just at least mention one other elephant in the room since we're talking about music. And that would be Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
okay, we're not going to talk about it.
That one had the what?
Well, it's funny you had that reaction because basically it's been talked about so much that we really don't need to say anything about it at all.
Except for its message. Don't dream it,
right,
be it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And we talked about a lot, but the midnight movie scene really and truly opened its arms up for gay cinema and more specifically perversely weird gay cinema.
Okay. Well, Stephen, I got to let you know something. I'm starting to fade here. I've had a very, very long day.
But, yeah, so, going back real quick, Scorpio Rising, Vapors, and Flaming Creatures were all shown at midnight.
Oh, absolutely.
And thank you for doing this series, period.
Oh, listen, no problem at all. And again, if I were to mention the three films that I think are very important to watch, I would say Victim, Outrageous, and of course, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which I think are all very positive viewpoints and representations of gays in cinema. I really appreciate the chance of doing this, Stephen, and I thank you very, very, very much for allowing me to do this on your network. And I really hope that people take a look at. Hold on. Let me finish. You have a tendency to do that to me. I just appreciate, you know, and hopefully people that are listening here get an interest in how, you know, not only are gays portrayed, but your own group, whether it be Jewish or Black or whatever, or handicapped, and look at how people are represented, and always look for the positive representations of humankind. So that's what I would say today. All right, Stephen, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, what the heck? We find the other three or four episodes that can make this together.
Yeah, well, okay, so all the episodes that I've been doing on Deviant Legion Network, you can find us on Facebook under that. They're all posted there. And if you can't find them there, you can also find them on my own personal site, Carl Kafer. Definitely on Deviant Legion, you should be able to find them. We're planning a show tomorrow about LGBTQ and spirituality and Christianity. So we're going to be doing that tomorrow. And we've got one more show at the end of the month, which will be, of course, the weekend of the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. So again, I really appreciate people tuning in and listening. And again, Stephen, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And I also tell the listeners something scary. We didn't touch 1% of the pre-made films that were out there. And we touched even less of that of the foreign films that are out there.
Right. Well, we did mention Fassbinder. We did mention some English films and things like that. So we certainly were representative. But we didn't want to go into the real, exploitative stuff. Though I will say this, okay? If you're looking for an exploitative film, okay, that is gay-friendly as far as I'm concerned, and I know you have one too, but my exploitation film would be Tricked Out Trannies with Knives. And, of course, yours would be the Pink Angels, wouldn't it?
Yes, a double feature of Pink Angels and Gays, word I can't say on the air, from outer space.
Yeah, they're out there too, people, but we didn't touch upon that today. We were being more serious.
And for real, let's be honest, if we wanted to recommend any gay and exploitation, we'll just say, look up Mark Piero.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that reminds me, too. Okay, I was just going to put in one more plug. We didn't mention it, and I'm sorry we didn't mention it, but a wonderful lesbian gay themed film is But I'm a Cheerleader. And you need to watch that one, too. That's a lot of fun. So I just needed to give a plug to that one, too.
And next week, Central Cinema is showing the new remaster of Paris is Burning.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And
very cool.
Good night, everybody.
All right, good night. Again, thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Stephen. Appreciate it.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Open the circuit. Let the chamber pressure increase. It's at full.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Blue Magneto's right. There's a war coming.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
You sure you're on the right side?
Hasta la vista, baby.